And now, for more politics, I'm joined by our regular Friday commentators, E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post. Hey there, E.J.
Good to be with you.
And David Brooks of The New York Times. Welcome back, David.
Thank you.
We're going to hear more reaction to the Iran vote elsewhere in the program, but I want to move away from Capitol Hill and talk about the campaign trail, mainly because voters don't look to Capitol Hill for presidents anymore. They're looking a lot more to outsiders, to the political establishment, something that you both have written about. And I want to talk to you about why you think that is. And David, to start, you talk about this idea that it's not about governing for voters, but about self-expression.
Yeah, people used to nominate the candidates who had served the party for a long time, the Hubert Humphreys or Bill Clintons or Ronald Reagan's, George Bush's. And party service and service to the party was an essential element of getting the party and the party's votes. But now on the Republican side, half the Republican voters are supporting Donald Trump and Ben Carson, who are either against the party or totally outside the party. And a lot of Democrats are supporting Bernie Sanders, who's a different kind of candidate, but who was sort of an independent. And so they're not honoring the party, they're honoring the individual. And that's a bad thing, I think. The parties are very effective coalitions, sometimes illogical coalitions, but coalitions of people that create majorities. And you need majorities to get things passed. You need governing majorities. And only a party can do that. Individuals can't do that. Individuals can just make statements. And so what's happening in a more individualistic society is we're supporting individuals and not parties. And I think that's going to make the country even more ungovernable.
And EJ, for you, this is not just about establishment hand-wringing, right, over Donald Trump and the like. What do you see as the issue here?
Well, this is clearly a phenomenon that's sweeping through, and I think David agrees on this, sweeping through all of the democratic countries. I think of it as a Yeats moment. It's one of, we always quote Yeats's poem, The Second Coming, the best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity, and things fall apart. The center cannot hold. And I think what you're seeing is that in country after country, traditional, broadly based parties and their politicians face scorn. And I think the collapse, the economic collapse in 2008, and the troubles a lot of everybody is having to get their footing again, is at the heart of these problems. In good times, moderate right parties can defend capitalism, moderate left parties can spread around money mm-hmm. and redistribute it. But when capitalists behave badly, the center right has trouble defending the economic establishment, and the moderate left faces a harder left. You see it in Syriza, to some degree Bernie Sanders, Jeremy Corbyn, who's a left-wing front runner to lead the Labour Party in Britain. They all have strong grounds for attacking the system. And lastly, in tough times, immigration becomes a much more powerful issue, as it is both here and in Europe. We spend a lot more time arguing about who us is and who them are. I think all those things are coming together in the democratic countries.
I want to talk about this more over the summer as these poll numbers change. But there is one establishment figure who's getting a lot of buzz, and that's Vice President Joe Biden. And I want to talk about him because last night he made an appearance on Stephen Colbert's Late Show. He gave a lengthy and personal interview, and he also talked about coping with the death of his son, Beau. Now, at one point, he was asked about whether or not he might run for president and whether about his emotional capacity to do so. And his answer came by way of this story about a trip to a Denver military base while he was shaking hands with servicemen and women and their families.
I was thanking them, but I really meant it. This 1% is fighting for 90%, 99% of the rest of us. And I was talking about them being the backbone and sinew of this country and all of us, and it was going great. And a guy in the back yells, Major Beau Biden, Bronze Star, sir, serve with them in Iraq. And all of a sudden, I lost it. How could you die? I shouldn't be saying this.
EJ, what did you think when you saw this?
It's one of Joe Biden's greatest lines. I mean, just to go back to the earlier conversation, everyone says these days they long for authenticity, even if people seem to fake it in some cases. I mean, with Joe Biden, I don't think people think he's faking it at all. And hearing him, I think there is a genuine struggle going on with him. I think a lot of him would like to run for president. He's done it twice. He clearly would like to be president. I think he thinks he's the right guy for this moment. But he is genuinely, and I got to say, I'd be totally wrecked if I lost one of my kids. He is really still in a lot of pain. And I think what he said is true. I think he really wonders whether he can make a race for president, feeling the pain he does about his son.
David, this answer for you?
Well, he's a beautiful man. To cover his campaign is to travel with his whole family and to be embraced by a family. He's very much a family man who quotes his mom and dad constantly. That interview reminded me or occurred to me that I may have sent something on this program that was completely wrong. I said a couple of weeks ago that this is an anti-establishment year and a guy like Joe Biden was not going to appeal to the electorate. And he is an establishment guy, but he is different. And that in that interview, you saw that he's different. He's uncontrolled in his emotion. He's open in his emotion. He is authentic. And so maybe he has that mixture of complete authenticity, complete comfortableness in himself. He's not artificial. He's not canned ever and incapable of being that. And some governing experience. So maybe it is his year. And the other thing that may have happened over the last 8 years, the guy we knew in the Senate was, frankly, undisciplined. But over the 8 years in the as vice president, he might be the only human being who's actually been improved and helped by holding that office. and so he may have been disciplined by that and be authentic enough to appeal to people. So maybe this is his year. It's worth considering that a Biden candidacy might be a very viable thing.
In our short time left, I want to remember Andy Kohut, founder of the Pew Research Center, frequent guest on this program, in his passing. And EJ, you've written about this. What do you see as his legacy?
You know, I'm heartsick because Andy was one of the best people in Washington, and he was an extraordinary person because at a time when the rule is here are the opinions on which I base my facts, Andy was relentlessly fact-driven. His contribution to the common good was going to be to produce real information that people could rely on. And I think every good pollster has to have what Andy has, and I don't think all of us have this. He was a small D, emphasis on small D, Democrat to his bones. He used to admonish people who claimed that opinions of the public were foolish or irrational, and he thought the pollster's job was to understand why people arrived at their judgments. The other way in which he was Democratic is he treated everyone equally and knew we had something to learn from everyone. I will so miss him, and I think our republic will, too.
David, last word to you.
Yeah, he was passionate about his subject while being disciplined and self-effacing in the way he presented it. And so he was one of those people you could completely go to. Under his leadership, the Pew Research Center became the premier polling organization in the country, which, you know, EJ and I cited in zillions of columns just because the data and the analysis was so good. He was especially good early on in identifying how important partisanship was getting and how important polarization was getting in this election. And he sort of led the pack in helping us understand what was going on in the country and how we were polarizing.
Thank you for your thoughts on Andrew Kohut. He died Tuesday in Baltimore. He was 73. EJ Dionne of The Washington Post and Brookings Institution, thank you.
Thank you.
And David Brooks of The New York Times, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.